This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Peter Maruzzi. He is the author of Fine Dining and a number of other books on mid-century modern. Peter, great talking to you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So you live in Palm Springs, which is famous for mid-century modern. Can you talk about your background and how you got interested in the architecture and dining?
Well, those are two separate topics. For architecture, I've been interested in preservation and architecture since I was a kid, growing up in Hawaii. And a friend of mine, his mother, involved me in a preservation effort for a movie theater that was being threatened. And that was back when I was in my teens. So that's how I got interested in preservation. I got interested in modern architecture just through research, just discovering mid-century objects and stores in the 80s, and then started just going from there and reading and learning about mid-century architectural design. And that's how it all started. So I connected my interest in preservation with architecture, and that's how I started the Palm Springs Modern Committee. But I've also been interested in other things, such as classic restaurants all over the U.S., mostly fine dining, but, you know, I like, you know, coffee shops, spooky coffee shops and things like that. But so much has already been written about those. I decided I was going to write something about classic restaurants, the continental style fine dining, because that actually hadn't been covered yet. So those are the two things that I've had a lot of interest in over the years.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Adventure Kid, Cartrell Payne. Adventure Kid, great having you on. You actually told me about the book. It's classic dining, not fine dining. But Cartrell, you're the one who exposed me to that book.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way I first discovered it is that, you know, I'm kind of into like vintage stuff, and you know, I was interested in it, and you know, I like the pictures that Sven Kirsten had in it, you know, and everything.
Yeah, Sven is my good friend, and he's a cinematographer, so he's always accompanying me and the various photo sessions that we've done all over the country, actually, for that book.
I mean, you know, he also has his own book on, like, I think the history of tiki and stuff like that.
Yes, he's 5 books out. All on, he's essentially the world authority on Polynesian pop.
You grew up in Hawaii. I was going to ask you more about Palm Springs, but since we're on the topic of Hawaii, is there a lot of great mid-century modern in Hawaii? I've just been to Maui, but even some of the hotels and some of the high-rise hotels in Maui are from the 60s era.
Yeah, there used to be. When I grew up in the 70s, there were a lot of mid-century buildings on Oahu, the main island where I lived, particularly in Waikiki, and Honolulu and Waikiki are adjacent. And most of them are gone now. The great ones have been demolished, I've been told. I haven't been back in a long time, but the great stuff, the restaurants and some of the, there was a place called the Waikikian, which was this incredible A-frame mid-century hotel that was, a lot of things, coffee shops, are all gone now. But although I wasn't really interested in that sort of thing per se at the time, I was aware of them and I thought they were cool, but that was my extent of my interest at the time.
The hotel I stayed at in Maui was called the Maui El Dorado. I think that's probably from the 60s.
El Dorado, huh? I'm not familiar. I actually didn't go to Maui all that much. I like the Big Island.
Yeah, I first got interested in architecture when I was a small child. You know, I watched Batman the Animated Series, and I saw how beautifully drawn, like, the Art Deco buildings were in the cartoon.
Yeah, and there's plenty of Art Deco in L.A.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like a noir and all that.
Oh yeah, the film noir era.
Full of it. Yeah, sure. The Wiltern.
Do you write about Art Deco, or do you focus primarily on mid-century modern?
No, I don't write about Art Deco. I love it, but I'm really more interested in post-war mid-century. From around 1945 to around 1975.
So you mean like Brady Bunch architecture?
Well, not exactly. I mean, that's certainly a part of the mid-century, which is that suburban ranch-style stuff, which is cool. But I'm thinking more things that were space-age or international style with, very little ornamentation, a lot of glass and things like that, where, the Bradys lived in this was in Burbank, I think, where the house is located. It's a ranch-style house, I think.
Man, if I had the money, I would buy that house.
You live in Palm Springs. Palm Springs probably has the highest concentration of mid-century modern architecture. Can you talk about the history and how did that come to be about?
Yeah, there's a lot of great mid-century in Florida, by the way. I'm sure like South Beach and all through the southern part of Florida, there's great mid-century stuff there, too. I think what makes Palm Springs unique is the predominance of great residential architecture. All of the wonderful commercial and institutional, all that. But it's the houses, I think, that people generally come to Palm Springs to see. And that's because, there were a lot of wealthy people here in the mid-century period, especially between, let's say, 1945 and 1965. And they were willing to pay good money to hire architects to build second homes or third homes. And oftentimes they decided they were going to have something that was very different from their traditional home, wherever they were from, up the Midwest or Los Angeles or Canada, and they would have a modern house built. So you have a lot of great custom mid-century houses. And then there was a tract developer from the San Fernando Valley, the Alexander Construction Company, that had a great architect working for them. His name was William Kreisel. And they came out here and ultimately built hundreds and hundreds of mid-century tract houses that are just beautiful. And because there's so many of them, Palm Springs is now known to be sort of the place to go for mid-century residential.
And besides residential, there's also hotels and restaurants. One restaurant you covered is Melvin's, which was also covered in the LA Times, and this one actually has Roman arches.
Yeah. Well, Melvin's is great. I mean, for classic dining, I'm not looking for mid-century architecture per se. And usually they're not. I mean, they have vinyl booths or leather booths, or they're dark, and they have, they could have velvet paintings on the wall. It doesn't really matter. It's just they have to have character and some style, some feeling of that era. And, Melvin's is a 70s place, although it was recently renovated, but they did a good job. They didn't mess it up, really. But they have the waiters that are wearing tuxedos, the old guys, and they have a piano bar, and they have a traditional menu with food items that you don't normally see. And it's just a very sophisticated and fun place. And that's where, a lot of people used to go. Frank Sinatra actually had his wedding reception there. So it's one of the last greats here in Palm Springs of that type.
Are there also a lot of mid-century hotels and resorts?
Not really. Most of those got demolished. I mean, before people started recognizing the value of those hotels, they were big. And, people wanted the land, so they knocked them down. The smaller hotels have survived. The smaller mid-century hotels have survived. The ones that have, let's say, 20 rooms or something. But the big ones are gone.
Yeah, I've lived in Southern California my entire life, and I've never been to Palm Springs yet, so I have no excuse.
No, you have no excuse.
Yeah. I've thought about moving to California, but to me, the politicians are too crazy.
What? I love the politicians in California. That's one of the best things about living here.
Cartrell, where are you in? Are you in Memphis?
Yes. I mean, yeah. I'm in Memphis.
I don't know anything about Memphis other than what I've read. And I've always wanted to go there, but I haven't been there yet.
Is there any mid-century modern architecture in Memphis,
Due
Cartrell?
Due to the fact we're an old city, I think we got some examples of Victorian architecture.
Oh, yeah. But you're saying not so much mid-century modern?
Yeah. Well, of course, some of those Victorian houses used to be slave houses, but still.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this goes back to your origins in Hawaii, but the thing that was big in the 50s and early 60s was the whole tiki craze, and that influenced a lot of those restaurants you cover in your book.
Yes. I mean, that wasn't really a Hawaii thing. It really originated in Southern California, oddly enough, and Northern California. Trader Vic was from Oakland.
And was Trader Vic a chain, or that was one place?
Yeah, it was a chain. It was absolutely, it was a very successful chain that survived and thrived for decades. It's still around, actually. There's Trader Vic's, I guess, in places in Europe and in the Middle East. Not so much here anymore. There's a few here in the U.S. And Don the Beachcomber started in Hollywood. And Southern California was just full of tiki bars, restaurants, apartment buildings that were that style, hotels. Palm Springs has one called the Tropics, by the way. It's still operating. It's great.
Are you familiar with the Tonga Room in San Francisco? It's part of the Fairmont Hotel.
Yeah, I love
Hotel.
The Tonga Room.
Yeah, it's part of the Fairmont sure. Hotel, but I heard they were going to demolish it along with the hotel tower.
No, that was a preservation issue a few years ago, but now the Tonga Room is apparently safe and doing very well, too, I might add.
Do they have... I mean, I've been to San Francisco many times. I've never gotten the chance to visit, but from the photographs I've seen, they have this indoor, like, water feature.
Yeah, it was originally the indoor swimming pool back in the 30s, I guess, and then it was converted into a restaurant. So now they have a floating barge in the middle of the pool where they have a small band that plays music, and then the tables are all arranged around the pool. So in with thatch and everything, and they have a fake rain that falls and all this stuff. So it's all there.
Is mid-century modern more associated with Southern California, or is there a lot in Northern California as well? You lived in Oakland for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's really well known in Southern California because San Francisco was pretty much built out by the time of the mid-century, so that wasn't all this vacant land where you could build houses and commercial buildings and all that in San Francisco. The East Bay has some. South Bay has some. And there are always good examples. Everywhere in the country there's good examples of modern design. Almost every town had a florist or a small drugstore or something that was designed in the mid-century style, or sometimes theaters and other small buildings and coffee shops and so forth. But Southern California really was the place where there were a lot of architects working, and there was a lot of open land, and so a lot of experimentation went on here, and there were a lot of tracks built and a lot of restaurants. So it all kind of all happened here at the same time, and a lot of the influence, a lot of the design spread across the country from here, actually, especially the Googie style of architecture.
Would that be like the restaurant norms would be Googie?
Yes, exactly. The perfect example of that, with the roof line that looks almost like arrows, triangles coming, you know, towards the street, lots of glass, kind of a space age sign, all that sort of thing.
I used to eat at the one near in West LA a lot as a kid, but you wrote about the one over on La Cienega, which was actually saved in a historic preservation battle.
Yeah, well, Ships Westwood was a really important one that went down in 1984. That was one of the most important.
I'm talking about the norms on Pico, near Pico and Westwood Boulevard.
Pico,
I know the one that's on La Cienega that's up in West Hollywood, the norms there. That's safe.
But I think the one on... near on Pico, I think that's still there. I have a few of them closed down.
Cool.
And a what?
Oh, I said, why did you decide to come to California?
What did I? I just was, you know, I've grown up in Hawaii, and Hawaii's a small island, or a group of islands, and I wanted to see the world, and I figured California's a good place to go, because that's where everything was happening, and still is. So
I went to school
here and never left.
I mean, you got a point, because I'm not sure when you went to California, but in the 80s, California had like a...
I came in 79. And yeah,
you had punk rock and crap, what else? Ooh, hip-hop was coming up too.
Yeah, I mean, there was just, and still is a lot going on here. And I was living in Northern California. And that's when Silicon Valley was just getting started, and that was my first job out of college, was working in the tech world.
One of the things that you recently, well, this was a while back, but there was this hotel called the Four Seasons restaurant in New York
City. Oh, New York?
And it was yeah. it part of the Four Seasons Hotel? Was that demolished?
No. It was. They just called the Four Seasons because it was decorated for each season. They would change the decor, the trees, everything for the Four Seasons. It's coincidental that there's a Four Seasons hotel chain. But
so
this
was before the hotel?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was 1959, 1960, so I don't think the Four Seasons Hotel chain even existed then.
Was the Seagram's building designed by the architect Philip Johnson? And did he design the Four Seasons?
Well, Mies van der Rohe designed the building, but Philip Johnson designed the restaurant portion, which was the ground floor.
How would you describe the visual aesthetic of it to the audience listening?
Well, there were two halves. There was the grill room, and then there was the pool room. The grill room was supposedly more informal, and it had a big bar, an O-shaped bar, had custom artwork. It had actually, the whole place was full of beautiful modern art, very expensive. There was like a Picasso tapestry hanging in the lobby. And the pieces of the furnishings were, from the high-end stuff, Saarinen and things from Herman Miller and from Knoll. But all of the places, everything was custom-made for the restaurant. So all of the plates and the flatware and the serving dishes and everything was custom-made specifically for that restaurant. And it was considered at the time to be the most modern, up-to-date, trend-setting restaurant in the world, actually, in 1960. It didn't change much over the decades. It was pretty much as it was until they closed it and gutted it, and now there's something else in there.
Oh, so you're saying they did demolish it?
Well, they gutted it. I mean, it's the space is there, but they just took everything out and put some trendy new restaurant in there.
With historic preservation, is interiors a lot more difficult to preserve than the exterior architecture?
Yeah, absolutely. Interiors are almost impossible. The odd thing was, that interior was a local landmark in New York City. It was one of the few, and that didn't really help it any.
Have there been a lot of strides in historic preservation for mid-century modern? How much of it is still at risk? Because I know that was a big debate recently, because if you look at past styles, Art Deco was in danger for a while, and then most Art Deco is preserved today, but now there's mid-century modern is sort of semi-preserved, but I'd say is it more at risk than the early 20th century architecture?
The residential stuff in Southern California is doing well because people will pay a premium for it, so if there's money in it, then it gets preserved. The commercial buildings, and for instance, Institutional Parker Center, which is the very modern building, the police headquarters in Los Angeles, is going to be torn down. And the Alex Conservancy had been fighting that for years and years and lost. There's a really important bank in West Hollywood, Linton Savings, that has this zigzag roof.
Oh, is that the one on Sunset?
Yeah. Right. Well, that was the judge just said, no, that can come down. So there's still a lot of threatened mid-century. It's generally not the residential, but it's everything else that's threatened.
And that's probably because residential, as you were saying, they're popular as homes. With the commercial site, they're more vulnerable because on a main street, the zoning allows for like a higher density of development. Well, in a single-family home neighborhood, it's more difficult to replace a single-family home with a condo.
Yeah, I think it's mostly because the modern houses are just more valuable than they used to be. But even there, a friend, I just was thinking of Beverly Hills. There was a Neutra designed house that was being sold as a teardown because it was on a great big piece of land. There was a big outcry, and the seller agreed to give the preservation a month to find a buyer, and a buyer emerged, and it was saved that way, and it's been completely restored, and it's beautiful. So there, you know, there's still examples of really good and important mid-century residential that is threatened. So, you know, it's a battle that never ends. I mean, preservation is something that goes on forever. You can't say, well, we're done now, because you're not.
Is that, you were saying that was one of the main issues that you got involved, that got you interested in this? You were heavily involved with historic preservation?
Right, and I still am.
As far as architects go, who are some of the most significant architects, Neutra being the most famous?
Well, I mean, we should just localize it to Palm Springs because, you know, every city has their own really great architects. You know, back east, there are all so many great ones. But in Palm Springs, Neutra did, you know, three important houses. John Lautner did some important houses here. Then there's some great local architects that, you know, you wouldn't know of except for Palm Springs. E. Stuart Williams is one, Don Wexler, William Cody, there's a guy named Hugh Kaptur, Albert Frey. There's just some really great local mid-century architects that did unique stuff in Palm Springs. So, but you know, L.A. has a bunch of great mid-century architects that didn't do any work out at Palm Springs, but you know, the lists are pretty long.
There's an architect, Eichler, who designed a lot of mid-century modern homes, but more in the Bay Area.
Yeah, actually, there's a good group of those in Granada Hills, of Eichlers. And there's some down in the city of Orange.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most of them were in Northern California, but there were these pockets that were in Southern California, too.
But they're not so much in San Francisco itself. A lot of them are in these far-out suburbs and places like Concord.
Yeah. Well, Palo Alto has some. There's a big cluster in Palo Alto.
And they're beautiful homes, but they're more modest and they're more catered to the middle class than, say, the Neutra homes.
Well, they were. Everything in Palo Alto now costs $5 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it doesn't really matter what it is. It could be a shack with an outhouse, and it would be $5 million.
But the design is a little bit more, it's simpler than the Neutra homes, which were built for, a lot of them were built for celebrities.
Right, and they were custom. Yeah, the Neutra designs were custom, so they, you know, each one's unique, pretty much.
Were some of these done originally as track housing developments?
Well, you know, the Eichlers were, as you mentioned, but Neutra really didn't design track houses. He did design some, but they weren't built. Most of the track houses were designed by architects that aren't all that well known, but, you know, William Kreisel worked for the Alexander Construction Company, and they built thousands of mid-century tract houses in Southern California. Many, many of them are in San Fernando Valley.
You have a book called Greetings from L.A., Greetings from Los Angeles. Does this focus primarily on mid-century modern?
No, not at all. It starts in the 1850s and goes all the way through 1965. There's a section that, you know, the post-war section has shows a lot of mid-century stuff, but it's actually a history of Los Angeles, you know, from all those decades. So, yeah, it's pretty comprehensive. And a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, you even talk about the backyard oil wells. There's still a few in existence today. I think Baldwin Hills, but there's even one next to the Beverly Center in near Century City.
Funny how those, that's right.
But originally, there were oil wells all over L.A.
Oh, yeah. Around 1900, when the big oil strikes occurred, you know, Doheny found oil in Los Angeles, right, you know, downtown. So all of those little neighborhoods are all around downtown suddenly realized they were sitting on top of oil, and so they would have an oil derrick, whether the front yard, the backyard, or both.
Are you familiar with that building at LAX? I forget what it's called, but there's a famous restaurant
there.
The
theme building?
Yeah.
Yeah, the theme building. Uh-huh, sure.
Is that considered the most significant mid-century modern building in L.A.?
You know, there's so many, but it's one of the most unique, and it's one seen by the most people, I would say. It's the most space age of all of the buildings, I think, from that era. But, you know, you have the Capitol Records building, and you have the Cinerama Dome, and you have, you know, the Googie Coffee Shops, and there's a lot of pretty iconic mid-century buildings all over L.A., but definitely the L.A. Extreme Building is in the top 10.
Even some of the airport terminals, maybe not at LAX, but I know at Las Vegas, Macaron Airport, there's a mid-century modern airport terminal.
Yeah, yeah. Airports were very much the place you'd go for that sort of design, because a lot of them were built right during that era, you know, from 1958 all the way through the 60s, and then, of course, they remodeled over the years, but... Sure. I mean, think of the TWA building out of JFK, right? I mean, it looks like a bird, you know, this sculptural bird, ultra-modern, and that was a TWA terminal.
So there's a lot of subgenres of architecture. There's the space age, and then there's Googie.
Right, and there's international style, and then there's, yeah, I mean, there's just sub-sub. I mean, there's desert modern out here, and yeah, absolutely.
You wrote about Havana before Castro, the book's titled Havana Before Castro, when Cuba was a tropical playground, and it was kind of a rival to Las Vegas. Does some of that architecture survive today?
Oh my God, has it. It's probably the last place you can go where you can see these mid-century buildings as they were originally, with the original furnishing. Some of the restaurants, like the main dining room at the... oh my God, I'm blanking on it. The Riviera Hotel, the Meyer Lansky's Riviera Hotel in Havana, has the original play settings, the original ones, from 1958, today. Some of the rooms have the original furniture. I mean, it's crazy. It's just because there's no money in Cuba, and there's no reason to change anything. They don't have any money to do it, and they just let it, it's crumbling away, but it's there.
I know in Las Vegas, they've been tearing down a lot of those mid-century modern hotels, like the Riviera was demolished recently.
Right. Very sad. Actually, one of the greatest that still exists is the El Cortez from 1940. I wrote the National Register nomination for it because I was so enamored with it and the fact that it still existed. And it's on the National Register of Historic Places now, and you should go visit it. I mean,
I haven't stayed there as a guest, but I visited and walked inside.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And there's a lot still on Fremont Street.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is hidden because of that horrible, what they call the downtown experience. You know, that covering where they screen, you know. Not even movies, I don't know what the hell they are, but you know, you can't drive down Fremont Street anymore like in the old days. So a lot of the facades aren't visible because of that weird shelter-like thing.
Oh yeah, I know about that. It did play a role in the revitalization, but it completely blocks the views.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I
stayed at the Flamingo. I mean, there's a few left on the Strip. I think that's one of the original hotels, but I think the high-rise tower was built in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, the Tropicana is probably the last of the real original ones, because they have a motel wing in the back that is original. And the rest of the hotel's been remodeled, but you can still stay in those it's called the motels, that are in the back, and they're wonderful. But I can't think of any other hotels that are from that era they're still around. And the Caesar Palace is there, but they've remodeled it so much.
Oh, the interior... I didn't get a chance to see the old Caesar's Palace. That was remodeled a long time ago. But some of the interiors are really spectacular. Have you seen old photos?
Good. Glad to know that, because so little is left of the old Las Vegas.
No, I'm not saying that... I'm not saying it's still there, but I'm saying... From what I've seen in photographs, I've even done I actually did a painting of one of the interiors of Caesar's Palace.
Huh, great. Yeah, that was over the top. I love the original interior.
I also did some paintings of the Madonna Inn interiors in San Luis Obispo, if you've been there.
Oh, I love Madonna Inn. And their steakhouse is really good.
Oh, yeah, I've been to their steakhouse.
Still really good. I was there recently, and I love it.
They also have interesting... Their steakhouse area is really interesting, but they have this bathroom where the urinal is like a waterfall.
Yeah, I have a funny true story. Probably about 25 years ago, when I was with my college friends, where we were driving there, and we stopped, and I went to use the urinal, and as I was standing there, the door opened, and a group of Japanese tourists came in to take pictures.
I mean, it's interesting, but from a practical standpoint, it's kind of annoying because when you're using it, you get sprayed by the waterfall water, so it's, I don't know how sanitary it is.
You know, it's ridiculous. That's what makes the Madonian so great. Pretty much everything about it is over the top and ridiculous, and you won't find that pretty much anywhere anymore. And it's completely original and there, and you can stay there, and you can eat there, and yeah, it's the best.
And then there's also the themed rooms. I've only been into the main part. I've never visited the rooms, but I've heard stories about them.
And they have postcards. You can buy postcards of each of the rooms, because each one's different. You know, the caveman room and the Victorian room and the Hawaiian room and whatever. I mean, they all have different themes. And, yeah, some are big, some are small. This is like an ad for the Madonna Inn. Go to the Madonna Inn.
What are your thoughts on the mid-century neon road signs and also the animated neon signs, which were popular in the 50s?
Oh, my God, I love neon signs. I have one in my backyard that came off a bowling alley. No, neon's really important. I mean, all that roadside stuff is so great and almost all gone. Although, in smaller towns in America, you still can find original neon. And I think people are starting to appreciate it now, in places where you wouldn't think, and are restoring those signs. But, they're beautiful. They're works of art. They're all custom made.
There's even an animated neon sign at the Madonna Inn.
Yes, there is. Right on the highway, 101.
And I usually draw, I mean, the last time I drove by there was in the daytime, but if you're driving by there at night, you'll definitely notice it. Even the El Cortez has a great sign.
It does. Oh, my God. It's on the roof. It's just gigantic. And it's been there since 1952.
But you have to approach it from the other side, facing further away. You can't see it directly from the Fremont Street Experience. You have to walk down the East Fremont Boulevard to get a good view of their sign.
Yeah, that's true. I would agree with you. And it's worth it.
And that's a whole area in Las Vegas. It's called Fremont East. It's some more smaller buildings, but that has a lot of great vintage signs.
It does. Some of the motels on Fremont East have been bought up and demolished recently, and it's very upsetting. Some of the ones that survived all the way, from 1956 to last year are gone now.
Last time I was there, I noticed there was one place where it looked like they demolished a motel, and it was just a vacant lot, but they kept the sign up.
Yeah, they've done that.
You mentioned that there's this restaurant in Palm Springs called Del Rey. And they're historic.
Oh, no, that's not in Palm Springs. You know where that is?
Oh, where?
That's in the obscure town of Pico Rivera.
Oh, really? You were mentioning that they replaced their sign with some weird plastic.
Yeah, I know.
Hey,
but I still go there. It's one of the great mid-century classic dining restaurants in America. And so I'm going there on Thursday night. So, I sort of didn't go there for 6 months after they took out their neon, but I'm going back because I've been going back for years because the food is incredible and the service is great and the cocktails are wonderful. I mean, it's just the best place ever. I have lobster thermidor. Where else are you going to find lobster thermidor?
Practically nowhere. But
that's right.
Are you a friend of Frank Zappa?
Am I a friend of him? I wish I was. I think he's gone now, but...
No, what I meant to say is, are you a fan of him?
Oh, sure.
Oh, me too. I mean, I love his music. Like, I like how bizarre and weird it is.
Yeah. Very much of the period, very Southern California. I mean, Yes.
Well, yeah, he was more popular in the 80s, but what was interesting is there was this kind of mid-century revival in the 80s with all these, there were all these kind of imitation 50s diners that became popular. There was this craze for a while. Do you remember that?
Do I?
Oh, yeah, in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, diners are not Southern California. They're more East Coast. And I really don't like it when they put the name diner on coffee shops. Coffee shops are West Coast, and diners are East Coast. But now, you know, like Denny's is called Denny's Diner, which is ridiculous. Because Denny's is Southern California, you know, it came from Southern California, and it was a coffee shop. So that's one of my pet peeves.
Yeah, but, you know, there's also diners in, like, Hawaii and Alaska, and, you know, they technically count as West Coast states, too.
Yeah, you're right. Good point. Good point.
Yeah, people always forget that Alaska and Hawaii are West Coast states.
True enough. So is, you know, Washington and Oregon. You're right.
Cartrell, were you going to ask about that place in Phoenix, Arizona?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know if you know about this place, Peter, called Maya Condominium. It was made during the Aztec revival, you know, of like the 70s, where, you know, for some weird reason, housing developers wanted their houses to look like Aztec temples and pyramids or whatever.
Yeah, I think, I think that's Frank Lloyd Wright that did that. I think it's called the Biltmore.
Yeah, well, there's this place in, like, Phoenix, Arizona. It's like these apartment buildings called the Maya Condominium.
And did you find out about that from Brandon Adamson?
Oh, yeah, you know, he put up, like, a whole article about it, and, you know, I read it.
Huh, yeah, I'm not familiar with it. It sounds great. I love Mayan Revival.
I do remember seeing something like that in Maui. It was this giant pink pyramid-shaped hotel that looked super 70s.
You went to Hawaii?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
It's one of those things that when it was built, it was probably considered an eyesore, but now it has a kind of kitsch value.
I'm sure it's great. I haven't been there in 30 years, 35 years.
Yeah, I went to Maui. I was a kid. It was in 1999, but I still remember.
You were a kid in 1999?
Well, I was like 13.
Wow, you're a lot younger than I am.
Yeah, me, I was like 4 on that when he went to Hawaii, so.
Well, there you go. I think I'll use an old man voice from now on. With my age.
I remember those days. I mean, you're not that old. You're basically like a young baby boomer, so.
I guess so. I was born in 61.
Yeah, so you're like a late baby boomer, so.
Supposedly.
Do you have any thoughts on the mid-century modern high-rises? There's a number of them in L.A., such as the Sierra Tower and the Sunset Strip. There's even a few in San Francisco on top of the big hills, like Knob Hill. I think the Fairmont.
Oh, they're great. They're
wonderful.
The
Fairmont, where the Tonga room would count.
Oh, I love mid-century high-rises. There's actually a whole row of them in Miami Beach. Condominiums, like a whole long row, one after the other, which I photographed, and they're still going strong.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I've never been to Miami, but I've just noticed a couple in. There's some in San Francisco, there's some in L.A., but in L.A. they're spread out, but you notice them here and there.
Now, actually, William Kreisel, the same guy that did the Alexander houses out here, which is a number of modern high-rises, he's probably most known for the ones that are in Coronado on the beach, the whole long row of condos, tall high-rise condos that are, you know, on the skinny bit of sand in Coronado. Those are all Bill Kreisel.
Oh, I've seen those. Yeah. That's near the Coronado Hotel.
Yes, exactly. Just south of that.
There's even a few in Santa Monica.
Yes, he designed some of those too, by the way.
Do you know the name of the one in Santa Monica?
You know, I don't, and I should. There's a great book out a friend of mine wrote about William Kreisel, and he has a whole section in there that talks about, you know, the high-rises and things that Kreisel did.
I know that architect we were talking about, Eichler. He designed a high-rise in that mid-century modern style in San Francisco. I think it's either Russian Hill or Nob Hill.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, he was very prolific. In Quincy Jones.
Do you think those types of high-rises are underappreciated?
Probably. I don't know if they're threatened, but they're probably underappreciated. I mean, they're not gorgeous in the sense that somebody would say, oh my God, you know, that's a wonder. Well, they might. I do. Sure.
Hey,
I mean, Sunset Tower, the one that's on in West Hall, or right on the
Sierra
border.
Sierra Tower, that's the one.
Yeah, that one's super cool. I mean, I think people might appreciate it.
You know what I think is an underappreciated, like, architecture form?
Yes?
McMansion.
Oh, really?
Those are replacing some of the great mid-century stuff. It's an outrage.
Well, there's nothing wrong with McMansions. I kind of think they're cool. You know,
really?
A lot of other people who like architecture hate them.
Well, they take up every square inch of the lot, so I guess if you like something really big and you like Roman columns, then you're going to like a McMansion.
Yeah, but what's the difference between like a McMansion and like a royal palace? They both take up a lot of land, I mean.
Well, usually you have a good architect that's doing a royal palace.
Yeah, I mean, people with money buy them, but I've never heard an architecture buff say they like McMansions.
Well, they look, because they're just you know, they're not original. They're just taking styles from the past and just kind of putting them all together and making something big. But, I mean, it's taking Roman columns and arches and, you know, windows and shutters and, you know, stuff from here and there and slapping it all together and making it as big as possible. There's nothing really original about it.
As far as the whole, like, Roman theme goes, there's a few mid-century modern homes in L.A., like, primarily, there's one in Beverly Hills off of Sunset that has a kind of Roman theme. And there's also one in Hancock Park.
But see, those were built in the 30s and 20s, and they actually are really well designed. I mean, they're not just thrown together cheaply like a lot of McMansions. Those are, I mean, there was a really good quality craftsmanship that went into those. They call them revival style. Like Tudor Revival and Greek Revival and Colonial Revival. But those, you know, those were really well designed and well constructed. Granted, they're not original in the sense that there's no, you know, you could find a colonial house in Boston or something, New England, but they're just really well designed. So,
kind of, I also like Xanadu houses, too.
What's that?
Oh, you never heard of a Xanadu home? You know, it's...
I don't think so.
Well, you see, after the movie Xanadu, a lot of people were inspired by, I think, the futuristic design of the movie, even though the movie kind of sucked, so they decided to make their homes look futuristic. I think it really took off in the 80s, but...
Huh. That sounds interesting. I need to learn about it.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with exactly what he's talking about, but I do know there is this kind of 80s futuristic style that you see in a lot of Hollywood mansions and films.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know,
it sounds like the disco era.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like where people are doing cocaine off of glass tables.
Yeah, well,
yeah, they have disco balls.
I never understood that. I mean, why not just do drugs like LSD and weed? Keep it simple.
There you go. Good advice.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever did LSD, but.
Well, if I did, I wouldn't admit it on the air.
Well, I mean, I haven't either. You know, I'm not going to admit any drug use because, well, you know, whatever.
I'm going to go back to using the old man voice. Yeah, you shouldn't be doing that kind of thing.
What do you think about a lot of the mid-century modern furniture, especially there's the Danish modern furniture is especially popular?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of it, but it's the old stuff. They're still making it.
Oh, like
it's really
design.
Expensive. The problem with
Well, there's design within reach, and then there's original stuff that was made out of a teak and rosewood.
Right. I have that stuff. But I've been collecting for a really long time. I couldn't do it now. It's too expensive. But, yeah, you know, design within, they're making new things that are, I don't want to call them copies, but they're inspired by the furniture of that period.
Yeah, my grandfather was from Denmark, so my grandparents, they had a Scandinavian import business, so I grew up with a lot of that stuff around the house.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I didn't, but that's why I like it now, I think.
Are you familiar with those lamps from Italy from the 50s and 60s? I think they're glass. I think they're called Murano lamps.
Yeah, I have one of them hanging a pendant in my front window here. Vanini. It's from Vanini. A glass company called Vanini on the island of Murano. Yeah.
What do you think about the mid-century clocks? There's the Suiza clocks from Switzerland, which are smaller, and then there's some of the larger clocks that were popular.
I don't have any of them, but I think they're beautiful. I'm sure they're really expensive now. I don't know.
I think Suiza clocks, maybe they're alarm clocks, but they're from Switzerland.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with a lot of this mid-century stuff is it's got too expensive. The original, anyway. So it's hard to collect it unless you have a lot of money.
Yeah, it would be cool if more businesses made replicas of that, but I'm not sure. If that probably would be expensive, too.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, yeah. Oh, you know, I was thinking about something. You know, Las Vegas was so much better when the Mafia ran things, for the most part.
Cartrell,
well,
have you been to Vegas?
Well, no, but I've heard it's
a
sleazy
town. I get to see the tail end of it when it still was the old Mafia way back in the 80s.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever seen
the
movie.
They're always still there. Huh?
I don't know if you ever seen like the movie Casino where he was talking about that, but you know, where like the last Mafia dogs were basically chased out of, you know, Nevada.
Yeah, I did. It's a terrific movie. In fact, the first half of it is the best. If you want to learn a class on how casinos operate, that's the movie to watch. They tell you everything about how casinos work.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, there was like also an ugly side to it too. Like, you know, a lot of the violence.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's nothing warm and fuzzy about the Mafia. It's just they happen to also own some pretty great hotels and stuff, but no, I mean, yeah, I agree.
So you're not such a big fan of the newer stuff in Vegas?
You know, it's okay. I mean, I stay downtown on, you know, Fremont Street. I actually stay at the El Cortez. I just find the new one so big, and I get lost, and, you know, the parking is a mile away from where you know, the rooms, and, you know, it's just like herds of people walking everywhere, and I don't know, it's too much for me.
You also wrote about the Oyster Bar at Grand Central Station. That's much older than mid-century modern, but it's noteworthy nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, it's in my classic dining book. It's amazing. I mean, it's got a beautiful tile work in the ceiling, and, you know, all the traditional seafood that you want, all the different types of oysters, and, you know, it's in that underground space that underneath, you know, the building. It's terrific.
Your book, Classic Dining, it's not just mid-century modern. It covers a wide range of eras.
Yes. Absolutely.
Is there anything from the Art Deco era that you cover?
I'm trying to think of any restaurants that still exist that are in those buildings. I don't think so.
Well, there's Musso.
Not off the top of my head.
Let's see, there's Musso and Frank's in Hollywood, which I think might be from, I'm guessing, the 20s maybe.
Well, they claim that, I think it says 1919 or something on the neon sign. But it's been remodeled over the years of the exterior. The interior is spectacular. And, of course, the food's great, the cocktails are great, and the waiters are wonderful, and there's so much history there. I love Musso and Frank.
Do you cover that in your book?
I mentioned it. At the back of the book, I have a list of all 50 states and classic dining restaurants that still exist in each state. And because the book only focused on a dozen restaurants in the whole U.S., I couldn't cover, you know, there's a lot I couldn't cover. So I put those restaurants in a list.
You actually have a Google Map set up on your site, so you can go on Google Maps and see the locations of all these different mid-century modern dining locations.
Well, not just mid-century. I mean, some of them are older than that. You know, some of the Antoine's in New Orleans goes back to, you know, the 1840s.
Cartrell, you should visit that place because that's pretty close. Have you been to New Orleans?
No, I mean, I've been to Houston, Texas before, but never New Orleans.
Really? You're so close. You're in Mississippi.
Well, no, I'm in Memphis now, Memphis, Tennessee, but...
All right.
Yeah, but, you know, it's still not that far away from me, so...
Hey, you should go.
I just was there in January, and all the great old restaurants are there still, and they're all terrific, every one of them.
Have you ever been during Mardi Gras? That's the best time to go.
I have not. I want to go.
You know, I'm not just saying that because there's topless women either.
Well, there you have it. I guess that, yeah, Bourbon Street has a lot going on.
Peter, do you have any upcoming projects or books that you're working on?
You know, no. My Los Angeles book is probably the last book I'm going to do. My publisher, Gibbs Smith, his actual name is Gibbs Smith, passed away about 4 months ago, and he was sort of my champion there. All my books are from Gibbs Smith, published by Gibbs Smith. So with him gone, I don't know. It's just, I've done enough books. I'm really happy with the books that I did. But now I'm living in Palm Springs full-time, and I'm on the Planning Commission, and I'm getting involved in politics, and so I guess that's my next adventure. Well,
you get involved in politics? What are you, like a populist?
I don't know if I'm a populist, but I'm a progressive.
You're progressive?
Sure. That's a Democrat like from the old days.
You mean like Bernie Sanders, or a progressive in like the early 20th century sense?
You know, Franklin Roosevelt and, you know, those guys.
Ew, Franklin Roosevelt. That guy was like a plutocrat.
Yeah. Yeah, but he did great things for the country.
I mean,
we probably wouldn't even have a country anymore.
I mean, you should look up to people like, I don't know, like, who's in a good example, like Norman Thomas, or like, Eugene McCarthy.
Well, those are scary people, or at least McCarthy's scary. I don't know the other guy.
No, I think
there's two different McCarthys. There's the McCarthy and McCarthyism.
Oh, wait a minute. Joe McCarthy and Eugene.
Oh, right.
I'm getting confused. Eugene McCarthy from the 60s. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know much about Eugene McCarthy from the 60s. I know he's anti-war, but, yeah, I don't know much about him. Al Franken was the kind of guy I liked, and he's gone now.
I like Ralph Nader better.
Well, I think he's a bit of a spoiler when it came to that election way back in 2000. But anyway, that's ancient history now.
Peter Morosi, it's been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
It was a lot of fun. I'd be glad to do it again if you ever wanted me back.
Sure.
Good night. And I'm.
Thanks, Cartrell.
I also might move to Hawaii.
There you go. It's a beautiful place.